Quincy, connecting the light. I've been off for a week, had a short vacation, went to see my two sons and my granddaughter, and had a very relaxing time on the south coast of England. Not very good weather for this time of the year, but sufficiently good to enjoy. Of course, in the meantime, a couple of weeks, shall we say, in the world, and certainly on the spirit levels, seems to be a long time, and so much seems to have come through. So I've got quite a packed programme, and I'm wondering indeed whether I can actually get through all this. But there is a saying, one should bend with the wind, and this is one of the weeks when there is quite a full quota of good material. Sheldon Nidles, as usual, which I shall read first. A very good message from Matthew, one which comes out periodically and not on a weekly basis. And also, I think the first one for a short time, an excellent message from Archangel Michael. So I hope to do justice to those because I feel they are the most important ones. There's a lot of little odds and ends in general news, and perhaps I could sort of jump the boat a little bit here by saying that on our British TV tonight, we heard about the breaking news, which I guess has probably already gone far and wide in the States, about Porter Goss, the CIA chief, resigning. One of the people in the studio was asked what the reason was, because he had only been in the job 18 months. And he said that there had been rumours for some 6 months that the staff there were not happy with his leadership and that there was low morale. And recently they were almost mutinous in wanting him out. So one has to believe that there is no smoke without fire there. And maybe he was pushed out, but took the decent way out by resigning. But clearly there is more information to come on that one. I must say, when we saw the announcement made by President Bush, he did look extremely uncomfortable trying to explain something that had taken place there. There we are. So that's the breaking news. So if you haven't already heard that through your own media, you know a little bit about it now. Without further ado, what I'd like to do is to come to Sheldon Nidles' message of April the 25th. As usual, there's so much in this one, I could almost read the whole thing, but I won't. I'll try and save time for other material. But I have to start by quoting a good part of his first paragraph, which opened up the message, saying that every major tropical forest on Mother Earth is under attack, and that the choking billows of smoke from myriad conflagrations are easily seen from near-Earth orbit, as are numerous dust clouds and plumes of pollution rising from our lands and cities. And he said they fully realise how the earthbound powers that be in your societies have created these lamentable environmental conditions, and that these proliferating problems have forced Mother Earth into a variety of self-healing modes, the result of which is a huge increase in the number of seismic events, volcanic eruptions, and changing weather patterns. As the imbalance is caused by our survival-oriented carelessness deepen, Mother Earth is left with no alternative but to counter like with like. And Sheldon's people say Mother Earth has asked us to inform you of her plight and to propose some vital solutions to these overwhelming problems. And he goes on to say that as Mother Earth ascends, much on her surface needs to change. Bear in mind that for nearly 13 millennia, she has allowed herself to be put into a most precarious position. This sensitive condition permitted you to survive and flourish, but nonetheless left her with an ecosystem of delicate checks and balances. Therefore, any one group seeking to destroy these fragile checkpoints was able to do so. He says that at the beginning, humanity was very mindful of the generous gift bequeathed to them by Mother Earth, but after a number of cataclysms engineered by the Anunnaki that terminated four major ages of humanity, mankind sank into amnesia and lost all knowledge of the great sacrifices Mother Earth had made for it. Then in the fifth great age, the one designated as recorded history, a ravaging of the many environments of Earth began in earnest. At first, these operations were relatively small and largely hit and miss. But in the past 2.5 millennia, the extent of the damage grew geometrically and in the past 100 years exponentially. Now, I'll jump a little bit, and still referring to Mother Earth, he says that Mother Earth's Council of Devas is orchestrating a wholesale rearrangement of the entire living ecosystem. Hence, many selected species were ready to become extinct as part of these preparations for the new reality. Nevertheless, Mother Earth sincerely desires your respect and wants you to stop destroying her forests, waterways, oceans, and even the air you breathe. Their message then goes on to say that besides her normal preparations for ascension, Mother Earth is quietly resuming those capacities she so nobly put aside some 13 millennia ago. Among these are energy receptors that allow her to receive increased energy from the sun. I beg your pardon, I should say from the source. This is activating planetary ley lines new to humanity and is resulting in anomalous conditions that sometimes interfere with your broadcasts and create electrical outages in your urban areas. Another aspect of this procedure is frequent adjustments of her electromagnetic grid. This has led, on occasion, to feelings of dizziness and a general sense of uneasiness in the more sensitive among you. Yet another consideration is the realignment of the Earth's precession and wobble. It prepares her to move into a new position where the degree of declination from true north and south is quite minimal. This also paves the way for her to operate as a fully conscious monopolar planet. He then refers to the Moon, which he says is likewise undergoing great changes. And the Moon is referred to here as He, and they say he prepares to resume his role as an artificial satellite of the great Transmartian world that we have dubbed Bellona. Evidence of preparations for reconstituting this largest of the solar system's water worlds has created a minor stir among your scientists. They are observing a large increase in collisions that naturally occur throughout the asteroid belt. While this great world starts her initial rumblings, the artificial sphere, that is your moon, is activating his central control center in anticipation of major surface reconfigurations. Once this moon possessed large oceans, continents, and an atmosphere that supported a varied ecosystem, then the great counterattack by the Galactic Federation laid him to waste, as the mother world occupied by the Anchara Alliance was reduced to a huge assortment of rocks that have circled the sun for the past 900,000 years. Now the time has come to make amends. I'd like to comment there that a couple of people have emailed me about that last statement, wondering if it sounded correct, that the Galactic Federation had actually destroyed a planet and the life forms on it. And I had to reply by saying that, to my knowledge, they would only resort to that type of defense if they were forced to do so and where there was no alternative. And, of course, from that period of time, 900,000 years ago, we have very little information. And for all we know, that one action may well have saved the lives of millions of people. So it's something we can't, at this stage, know the details of, but I feel sure the Galactic Federation would be able to justify whatever action they took. So, I will move on and say, the message continues, similar alterations are taking place on the other inner planets of your solar system. Both Venus and Mars are heating up. The movement in their mantles is readying them for their respective futures as monopolar worlds. Also, the slight orbital corrections of Venus and Mercury are requisite for becoming monopolar worlds in a close proximity to the Sun. Moreover, these corrections are part of a procedure to manifest the innermost world called Vulcan, discovered by your astronomers in the mid-19th century. Shortly after she was named and her orbit plotted, Vulcan unaccountably vanished. This anomaly was caused by the Elohim, who needed to move her temporarily into higher dimensions until this time in your history. Now the procedures are well underway to reposition Vulcan in your future solar system. Referring to the Sun, they say that the Sun is going through great changes as well. Many solar scientists are becoming alarmed by the fact that even in her period of quiescence, the Sun is much more active than usual. Again, in this current hyperactivity is due to her need to transform into a fully conscious version of herself. The Sun is the great mother who gave birth billions of years ago to your solar system. In doing so, she produced a fully conscious realm filled with a huge diversity of sentient life forms. When this solar system was exposed to the galactic war millions of years ago, that rude intrusion wreaked havoc with her offspring, eventually forcing her into extensive changes to her original configuration. Now, remedial actions are underway to restore the solar system to her former glory as a fully conscious jewel near the edge of this galaxy. The spiritual hierarchy and our ET friends say that their task is to assist the Elohim in this mission. And they go on to say that your global society is becoming more conscious, and those in charge of your deliverance from Earth's last cabal remain committed to their task. It is crucial to recognize this and not get caught up in unprofitable bouts of frustration. So there I will end my extracts from Sheldon's message, although that covered quite a lot of it. But I think it might be nice in regard to the number of interesting bits of information in that message, just to reiterate, as I believe we have found out ourselves, that the Moon is an artificial satellite. And I recall when the Moon landing first took place, one of the tests they carried out was to explode something on the surface and then record the effect by registering the vibrations, and the result was that the reading said to them that the Moon was hollow. Now, you haven't heard a lot about that because they couldn't explain it, I suppose. So it is confirmed here, in as much as they tell us the Moon is an artificial satellite, and as they said, it's going to resume its role as a great trans-Martian world. And Mars is being reconstituted, and it is the largest of the solar system water worlds. The Moon is activating its central control system center in anticipation of major surface reconfigurations, and the asteroid belt, which I understand was the planet Maldek, which was the mother world of the Anchar Alliance, that was 900,000 years ago, was destroyed by the Galactic Federation. So, one would assume that that was entirely because no other options were open to them. Anyway, they do say that the time has now come to make amends and put everything back to rights. So, I will leave that message there, and what I will do is come to the general news. I'll jot about a bit tonight, And then after that, I'll come to Matthew's message. In the UK, we don't seem to get a lot that's, I guess, worth noting, although Tony Blair, in light of a very, very bad result in the London elections, has shuffled his cabinet around. He keeps threatening to go, but he still keeps hanging on, and I think that's having an adverse effect on his Labour Party. But what I did read a couple of days ago, and it was something I was unaware of till I read this little snippet of news, is that the ministers did a U-turn on what they called the dictator bill. And this would have allowed the government to change laws without Parliament. And the Cabinet Office Minister, Jim Murphy, told the MPs he had listened and acted, and the regulatory reform bill would now give them the right to veto legal changes. So our government, as I read it, was trying to follow the pattern of developments in the States by trying to give themselves, I don't know whether it would be, have been total authority, but unchallenged authority to change the laws. So I'm pleased to hear that that's been stopped for the time being. Having mentioned about the resignation of Gross in the CIA, a couple of weeks ago I read by email, and this was in an article by Ken Silverstein. Unfortunately, I haven't got any more information as to what he writes for or who he writes for, but I thought there's one or two interesting points here. He actually called the CIA Wehrmacht. And he mentioned that with the war in Iraq, an utter debacle, and public opinion turned against the White House, anger within the armed forces towards Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and the administration is growing, and the Pentagon is fighting back. He said that what's been little noted thus far is what looks to be a similar revolt brewing at the CIA. An ex-senior agency officer who keeps in contact with his former peers told me that there is a big swing in anti-Bush sentiment at Langley. And he said, quote, "I've been stunned by what I'm hearing. There are people who fear that indictments and subpoenas could be coming down, and they don't want to get caught up in it." And the former senior officer said, "There seems to be a quiet conspiracy by rational people at the agency to avoid involvement in some of the particularly nasty tactics being employed by the administration, especially renditions, the practice whereby the CIA sends terrorist suspects abroad to be questioned in Egypt, Syria, Uzbekistan, and other nations where the regimes are not squeamish about torturing detainees." And he said, my source, hardly a softie on the topic of terrorism, said of the split at the CIA, "There's an SS group within the agency that's willing to do anything, and there's a Wehrmacht group that is saying, I'm not going to touch this stuff." And finally, Scott Horton, a human rights activist who has become a principal spokesman for the New York City Bar Association in evaluating the Bush administration tactics, said he's also hearing stories of growing dissent at the CIA. So there you are. I already had that one ready to read out, and the announcement of Gross's resignation has followed on that, so it proves that those bits of information that were floating around were quite well founded. Talking of another organisation, the FBI, I saw a little snippet which I have no reference to source, but it was saying that the FBI secretly sought information last year on 3,501 US citizens and legal residents from their banks and credit card, telephone and internet companies without a court's approval. Apparently the Justice Department made that statement on, I think it must have been the last Friday in April. So there was an added comment saying that this was ballooning from early reports of just 35 over an 18-month period. So there we are. That's not new news by any means, but it shows that people are looking at these things. They're bringing it to the public attention and trying to do something about it. It's interesting that with all the talk of 9/11 now, and there is so much information to show that it was a put-up job, that on the prisonplanet.com website, there is mention of a former German minister who said that Building 7 was used to run the 9/11 attack. And I quote, this is the former Helmut Schmidt cabinet member, 25-year German parliamentarian and global intelligence expert, Andreas von Bülow, say that the 9/11 attack was run by the highest levels of the US intelligence apparatus using WTC Building 7 as a command bunker, which was later demolished in order to destroy the crime scene. And speaking to the Alex Jones show on the GCN radio network, von Bülow said that the official story is so wrong, it must be an inside job. In the same article, it went on to say that the names of those 19 hijackers, which von Bülow commented on, and he disputed the identities of them, he said the names never came up in the official passenger list until now. There's no proof they were on the planes. And he also pointed out how the alleged hijackers' flight instructions told investigators that they couldn't even fly Cessnas, never mind complex, large, commercial airliners. So there we are. A little bit more, as they say, grist to the mill there. We're learning more and more about it, aren't we? And it seems that these little bits of information are never ending, and they still keep coming out. There was an email a couple of days ago about the defence budget in the US, and it's under fire, apparently. This came from Current Events, and they mentioned that with Congress on the verge of approving yet another Pentagon budget, a record one indeed, a task force of nearly two dozen progressive policy analysts is calling for major changes in the way the United States allocates money for its common defense. At some $440 billion for 2007, the Pentagon's defense budget would exceed the combined military budget of the world's 25 next most powerful nations, according to recent estimates. I mean, that is amazing, isn't it? Makes you wonder, but for that, what I call waste, what on earth could you do with money of that great figure? Makes the mind boggle, doesn't it, as to what you could do. Right, I'll move on now to another small article about Iraq. And this came from the neilyoung.truemajority.org website. It's only a small thing here. And what they're saying is, take a listen to the powerful voice for ending the quagmire. And while you're there, you can raise up your own. True Majority members today are launching a push behind a new Senate amendment to get our troops out of Iraq by New Year's Day, and they mean New Year's Day 2007. And the amendment introduced by Senator Russ Feingold says that Congress will only hand over the latest $68 billion that President Bush wants for Iraq war if his administration gets the troops out by December 31st, 2006. It would support the troops, but not the unending war. There we are. That's a good stand against it, isn't it? So these groups do exist, which is wonderful to hear. Of course, in the last few days, you've had the New York City protest against the war. And I read that tens of thousands of protesters marched last Saturday through Lower Manhattan to demand an immediate withdrawal of US troops from Iraq, just hours after this month's death toll reached 70. Moving on to Iran, I read that, and this came from an Irish Times article, and also through Dennis Staunton in Washington, that the United States has rejected Iran's offer to allow inspections of its nuclear facilities, and Washington will continue to press the UN Security Council to penalize Tehran.
our own offer to allow inspections to resume if the Security Council turned the dispute over to the International Atomic Energy Agency. But US Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice yesterday dismissed the offer as a ploy. And she said, quote, "I think they're playing games. Every time we get close to a Security Council decision, there's some effort to say, oh no, we really were interested in that proposal that we rejected." And that was what she told ABC this week. So that's all I quote from that. But would you not think that if people were seeking a peaceful conclusion to the problems there, that no matter how that offer came up, they would accept it? I mean, you would have, on the face of it, absolutely nothing to lose. But one has to suspect that because Bush and his gang have a different agenda, maybe they would rather leave it in the precarious position that it is, because maybe they still hope they can justify some sort of attack on Iran. Moving on to a letter that was initiated by Georgie Hirsch, who is a professor of physics at the University of California. I read that 13 prominent physicists wrote a letter to Bush calling US plans to reportedly use nuclear weapons against Iran, and I quote, grossly irresponsible, and warning that such action would be gravely irresponsible for the security of the United States and the world. That's all I've got from that little report, but I think when 13 prominent physicists write to the president with their experience and their knowledge, you'd think he would take notice, wouldn't you? But you wonder if he will. Now, on another article, which came from Democrats.com, yes, indeed, that's correct, they were saying, victory, no permanent bases, amendment passes both houses. And they tell us your efforts paid off. The Senate, like the House, passed an amendment to the supplemental spending bill banning the use of any of its funding for the construction of permanent bases in Iraq. Will the amendment survive a Republican-run conference committee? We'll be watching. Meanwhile, give yourselves a huge pat on the back and get ready for the next fight. Here it is. George Bush is considering attack in Iran, including using nuclear bombs to do so. Such an attack would be illegal and disastrous. Congress can prevent it, but only if Congress asserts its constitutional right to decide whether or not the United States goes to war. And Congressman Peter DeFazio's expresses, and I quote, "the sense of Congress that the president should not initiate military action against Iran with respect to its nuclear program without first obtaining authorization from Congress." And he said this bill is rapidly picking up co-sponsors but needs more. And he's asking people to get their Congress members to sign on. And he said ask your senators to take the same step in the Senate. Contact Congress. So there you are. What I do wonder when they talk about the construction of permanent bases in Iraq and trying to stop it, this may be a silly question, but I wonder how you find out what is actually intended to be a permanent base, because I've read that there are already quite a number in Iraq, and they give the impression that the troops are not expected to come out in the very near future. There was recently a report by Professor Justin Frank, who is a leading psychiatrist, and he has written a book, Bush on the Couch, and he wrote that after studying Bush's medical records and behaviour, and he argues that his medical condition has indicated another condition common in schizophrenics, and that is megalomania. And he thinks the condition could drive him to invent and destroy enemies to demonstrate his power. And he says the defining characteristic of megalomania is the need, driven by internal fear of persecution, to pinpoint, then annihilate all persecutors perceived as outside threats. Apparently a psychiatrist at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. said, behind Bush's affable exterior operates a powerful but obscured delusional system that drives his behavior, and he blames his mental state on his untreated alcoholism as a youth, his fundamentalist religious beliefs, and his love-hate relationship with his former president dad, George Bush Sr. There's a little bit more to that, but I suppose if you're really keen on reading that, then you need to get the book, Bush on the Couch. But it's interesting that a person who's suspected of having that condition can actually make it as far as becoming the President of the United States, isn't it? But then again, of course, we know that for two consecutive elections, he has been put in place illegally anyway. Reading on, I see that the government is to be sued over Medicare drug benefit, and this was a report from Washington saying that the Bush administration was accused in a lawsuit a week ago, Wednesday, of failing to ensure that poor people were enrolled properly in Medicare's new prescription drug benefit. I don't know much about Medicare, but again, I think it's nice to know that there are some people that care about these things and try and get something done. The Bush impeachment is alive and well, apparently. They say that the Illinois General Assembly is about to rock the nation, and that members of state legislatures are normally not considered as having the ability to decide issues with a massive impact to the nation as a whole. But apparently, Representative Karen A. Yarbrough of Illinois, 7th District, is about to shatter that perception forever. She stumbled on a little-known and never-utilized rule of the U.S. House of Representatives, which allows federal impeachment proceedings to be initiated by a joint resolution of a state legislature. So there we are. Someone found a little loophole there. So they are preparing to, as they say, drop a bombshell. So it's going on, and as we know, they're not the only states to do it, because I read another report from the 1st of May which says that there are three state legislatures, Illinois, California, and Vermont, that have now introduced resolutions to send petitions to the U.S. House of Representatives to initiate impeachment proceedings against Bush, and in the case of California, Cheney too. And Minnesota, Missouri, and Oklahoma all have legislatures still active in May, and Delaware, Louisiana, RI, South Carolina, and Puerto Rico are all up and running through June, and New Hampshire is in session through July. It says every state has legislators brave enough to take the lead, and if we urge them to do so, we must provide them with the information they need. So that's interesting, isn't it? That's really gathering pace, that movement. I read a little article in one of our papers today, and I don't know if it's surfaced in your papers in the States, but apparently you are creating a weapon which is called a ray gun to destroy enemy spacecraft, and it's called Starfire. And apparently Bush has given the go-ahead to create the weapon, and at the moment laser experiments are being carried out in the New Mexico desert. Apparently this weapon shoots up beams of light. But we wonder, who are they going to point it at? You see, one has the horrible feeling that they are anticipating the time of first contact, and they are going to have their last throw at preventing it taking place. I don't think they'll succeed, because the ETs have far superior technology, but it's an interesting development, isn't it? So keep your eyes out and your ears open for more news about Starfire. It's almost certain to come up. There's been quite a bit going around about DU, that is depleting uranium, and this came about in an article of the 28th of April by Lorraine Moray, and I think it was quoted on the 4winds10.com site, And they were talking about depleted uranium, dirty bombs, dirty missiles, and dirty bullets. And they said that a Japanese professor, Dr. K. Yagasaki, has calculated that 800 tons of DU is the atomicity equivalent of 83,000 Nagasaki bombs. And the U.S. has used more DU since 1991 than the atomic city equivalent of 400,000 Nagasaki bombs, four nuclear wars indeed, and 10 times the amount of radiation released into the atmosphere from atmospheric testing. And the report says, no wonder our soldiers, their families, and the people of the Middle East, Yugoslavia, and Central Asia are sick. But as Henry Kissinger said after Vietnam, when our soldiers came home ill from Agent Orange, quote, military men are just dumb, stupid animals to use for foreign policy, unquote. Unfortunately, more and more of these soldiers are men and women with brown skin, and unfortunately, the DU, radioactive dust, will be carried around the world and deposited in our environments, just as the smog of war from the 1991 Gulf War was found in deposits in South America, the Himalayas, and Hawaii. And in June 2003, the World Health Organization announced in a press release that global cancer rates will increase 50% by 2020. And the article finishes by saying, what else do they know that they aren't telling us? I know that depleted uranium is a death sentence. So there we are. That certainly hasn't seen its last report. I'm almost certain of that. Another interesting report that came from the site Rens.com, a touch of the Big Brothers here, talking about the jeans manufacturer Levy, and it read that it may be time to ditch your dockers and lay off the Levies, say privacy activists Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre, because new information confirms that Levy Strauss and Co. is violating a call for a moratorium on item-level RFID by spy-chipping its clothing. And what's more, the company is refusing to disclose the location of its US test. Now, radio frequency identification, which is RFID, is a controversial technology that uses tiny microchips to track items from a distance. And these RFID microchips have earned the nickname spy chips because each contains a unique identification number, like a social security number for things that can be read silently and invisibly by radio waves. And over 40 of the world's leading privacy and civil liberties organizations have called for a moratorium on chipping individual consumer items because the technology can be used to track people without their knowledge or consent. Boy, it gets worse, doesn't it? The more you read of those type of things, the more severe it's all getting. Anyway, that's all for the general news. It was a little bit long, I suppose, in spite of the fact that I gave little snippets of news, because I'm backtracking on a couple of weeks. Now, I must come to Matthew's message now. I have a great faith in his replies, and he started off by giving an answer to someone who asked a question about the avian flu movie. And he said, we know this movie from Earth monitors in Nirvana. Yes, spear and inoculations to initiate the disease are the double purpose, but the latter won't happen. We feel that little fear will result. Simply, the time has passed for this to have effectiveness that the Dark Ones intend. He says Earth's people have become weary of scare tactics like the coloured terror alert system in the United States, the SARS virus with its elaborate precautions and publicity before abruptly disappearing, and now the bird flu pandemic that some time ago left the top of the news because the virus has shown no indications of mutating into a communicable human disease. In both of these disease situations, death and sickness on a wide scale was the intention. Because your benevolent ET family used their technology to greatly reduce the potency of the virus strains, only individuals with the weakest immune systems were affected, and the technology neutralized the most harmful ingredients in the contaminated vaccine. He goes on to say that he doesn't want to belabor bird flu, but one writer is concerned that the outbreak of mumps in the US is man-made, so bird flu virus can be put in the vaccines to inoculate against mumps. And another asked if there will be a mandatory requirement for meningitis vaccinations, and the father of a newborn wants to know if religious beliefs will be sufficient reason to keep his baby from having to get the usual vaccination. So Matthew replied, saying there will be no bird flu epidemic, let alone endemic, but until all inoculations are halted, which will happen when there is sufficient knowledge about the harmful ingredients in all vaccines, for the sake of your health, refuse them. Now, I thought that is very strong words indeed, and absolutely positive. You have heard, I'm sure, of other people who have analysed what is in the vaccines and the use and the problems they cause, and immediately springs to mind is the name of Dr. Horowitz, who's, if you haven't heard of him, I don't know too much about him, you can go to his site on the web and read a very experienced and professional man's opinion about them. Now, Matthew said, take heart in knowing that this is another area where your space family has been at work to reduce the harmful effects to the extent possible. And this is referring back to mandatory inoculations. And he says that all diseases that have ever befallen residents of Earth were created by the darkness which feeds on fear and creates situations that generate fear. And assuredly, the portent of illness and death of epidemic or endemic proportion does that. Later, greed also entered the picture with required vaccinations and prescription drugs, establishing an exhaustible market for pharmaceutical companies. He says he's had several questions about a comet that will collide with Earth May the 25th. And he was asked, in short, will it happen? And he said, although reports of predicted or potential global catastrophes, such as this kind of collision would cause, may be disseminated by persons wishing only to alert others, this kind of information is originated by darkly influenced minds purely to cause fear. He was asked, will the Iraq war turn out all right and when? So he replied by saying that the occupation of Iraq, primarily by US military, will end much sooner than the internal conflicts of that besieged country, where ages-old differences have been exacerbated by the invasion and all that has ensued. Already there has been some foreign troop withdrawal, and the rotation of US troops will diminish within the next several months as the energy for peace keeps mounting its forcefulness. But for the war to turn out all right, no political or military opinion will suffice. And he was asked questions about Iran too, and he said, briefly restating that there likely will be incursions but no full-scale war. I don't mean that the Illuminati's intent to conquer Iran and all other countries in the Mideast has changed. It hasn't. But the time when they could implement their long-standing plans has changed and passed. The energy momentum toward peace is unstoppable. He was asked about the Illuminati influence and how much that was affecting us. And I'll mention one part in his, in fact, quite long reply. And he says that the Illuminati gave themselves that name, which means the enlightened, but they don't publicly refer to themselves that way. They work in secret, but the results of their efforts are seen throughout your world. Illuminati members lead national governments and their regulatory agencies, global economic agencies and banking, European royalty, international corporations, the United Nations, legal, policing and justice systems, educational institutions, all media forms, church hierarchies, the various medical and prescription drug establishments. And he says, I may have forgotten some areas, but in short, there is no area of your world that is not Illuminati, infiltrated, and influenced. And he says, now above the Earth, human Illuminati top level are the dark souls of the reptilian civilization, some of whom are embodied as humans and living on the planet. They are working in conjunction with their dark reptilian brothers off-planet, whose goal is total domination of Earth, if not by absolute control, then absolute destruction. The light forces of the universe, including reptilians, are in confrontation with the darkness of any civilization. What is happening on your planet is a reflection of the universal conflict, and regardless of universal progress, your beloved Earth will be freed from the clutches of darkness as she rises farther into higher vibrations where love reigns over all. It's interesting there because that gives a lot of credence to many statements in David Icke's books about human reptilians upon the Earth. So he can perhaps feel vindicated by Matthew's reply, let alone anybody else's. He goes on to say, I see that I did forget to mention several areas of Illuminati power. The entertainment field, communications licensing, environmental and intelligence gathering groups, and royal families definitely include those in the Mideast too. But I think that not identifying the Zionists is my most serious omission. And he says, when I speak of Illuminati control or influence, it does not mean that all members or all groups are actively involved, nor do I often repeat that there are two factions within the Illuminati competing with each other for supremacy. What my Illuminati designation always means is the faction's common darkness, their intent to rule the world and cause suffering through fear, civil and international wars, religions based on lies and divisiveness, impoverishing nations by controlling their governments and natural resources, environmental abuse, disease, tyrannical regimes, corporate corruption, unfair laws and taxation, seriously flawed education, promoting the illegal drug industry and legally drugging the population, and so on. So that's quite a long list, isn't it? He's hardly missed anything out at all there, but I mean, that has to be, I suppose, quite frightening in its own way. He was asked a question about Muslims, and part of his reply said that the fanatical face of Muslims is prominent, largely by media emphasis, but the tenets of this religion do not espouse hatred or killing. Actually, the basis of the faith is more aligned with the universal truth than Western dogma, but by dark intention, you are not seeing this aspect of the believers. Well, it's nice to know, isn't it? Because maybe for different reasons we have perhaps not a very clear picture of what the Muslims actually believe. He had more questions about depleted uranium, and he said, when your space brothers and sisters can work openly on the planet, all pollution, including radioactivity, will be eliminated. So there you are. But they have the advanced technology to handle problems that we probably couldn't deal with for hundreds, if not thousands of years, so that's very, very good to hear. He went on to talk about souls who need to endure such traumas as genocide, starvation and AIDS, or suffering from any cause. And he said, you are resisting my many explanations that it is needed to balance other lifetime experiencing. Why didn't this need for balancing long ago? Earth is still operating in the time your civilization devised for past, present and future, whereas in the continuum, the ones whom you know are suffering are simultaneously causing or ignoring the pain of other souls, and also they are flourishing in abundant health and joyfulness, their past and future lifetimes in third and higher densities, respectively. Also, there is a planetary karma that every soul on Earth knows about before birth and chooses to play a role in fulfilling. The plight of those living in heart-rending circumstances has stirred compassion worldwide. The light in those feelings and in the actions they motivated are helping to lift Earth out of third density, where the negativity of darkness thrives. During the transitional period from this moment into the world of love, peace and harmony that you are co-creating, all the heartache, tyranny and pain will cease. So please keep steadily envisioning the world. He goes on to talk about souls with their pre-birth agreements who call for lifespans to include a few more calendar years. And he says they will indeed live in the golden age and witness the marvels that will be occurring all along the way. If not, they will joyfully see this in spirit, and they may choose their next physical lifetime there. So I jumped a little bit, because Matthew always does plenty of pages of information. And he was saying that if the condition is a sole contract provision, the patient's energy field will simply block the healing effort and disease will continue to run its debilitating course. But that also can be the outcome if the patient doesn't believe healing is possible. So he said that in answer to a question which asked how energy healers could tell if a patient's condition was part of their soul contract. And of course, all of us who have been or are healers will know that with some people, you can, no matter how good you consider you are, you can't seem to get a response. So that's part of the reason. I'll finally quote from Matthew's message, and that was at the conclusion of it. He said, as Earth continues into the high vibrations, people who accompany her physically will treat all animals with the respect and compassion these souls deserve. As I said before, they once again will live peaceably among themselves and with humankind. And the joyous thought to leave you with is that the harmony on your horizon includes telepathic communion with animals and the plant and Vedic kingdoms too. You will feel the infinite and eternal love energy of Creator, that is the life force of every soul in the universe. That's a nice note on which to end. And I must say, speaking personally, I get quite a few emails where people are concerned about the changes that are coming and what will happen to their animals, etc. Because let's be fair, I love cats, and I've had quite a number. You do get very attached to them. Now, I'll finally come to a few messages that have, one that's only turned up today in my emails, but it's the content that I think is interesting, which I will read. And although the name isn't on this, and it was passed through someone else, I've got a feeling this is Sananda coming through a lady called Lauren. And this is a message from May 2006. They're updated apparently daily, and this is the message for today. Now, listen to this one. This will be a historic day for you and your country. There is planned to be a special announcement from your government tonight. We are not sure of what will be broadcast, however, it may be the resignation of your president, or it may be the announcement of the rainbow currency, or both. At any rate, it will be a memorable day if all goes as planned during the completion of distribution of the prosperity funds that has been going on this week. There will soon be the landing of the space shuttle in your valley, now that the government has changed, if that is the message tonight. However, it does appear that events are progressing so that there will be a culmination of events that would allow for the landing and flyovers of our shuttles. There is much to be done in order for us to help clean up Mother Earth's atmosphere. In addition, there is much to be done to get my messages out to the many leaders of my Christian churches. That is the most important task that I shall have to do soon after the first landing. Now, I'm guessing that's probably an extract from a slightly longer message, but anyway, that's extremely interesting, so I think we wait, holding our breath, to see if that announcement comes. I mean, can you believe it? The resignation of Bush. So you don't get the impression he will, but then you never know what pressure's on him, do you? Even his own party, I think, are being embarrassed by what is happening. I read that last month, the Ashtar teleconference, that was on the 18th of April, a little note here through Susan, he was talking, this was Ashtar, about things that wouldn't be going to happen on Earth. And I've summed it up as this, that there would not be an asteroid or something to hit the Earth, there would not be a nuclear explosion, there would not be volcanic eruptions and earthquakes and tidal waves with the Earth going under. So there we are. I think that's generally confirmed if you read regular messages from the ETs. They can control most of what happens, although we've been warned that Mother Earth must be allowed to flex her own muscles, if you like, because she has to move parts of the Earth's surface in the way of her own cleansing. There was a lovely message that came out, which I received today, which is this month's message through Rona Herman from Archangel Michael. They're wonderful messages, very inspiring. They're top drawers, I call them. And I've taken out some of the, what I call, the most potent bits. And he says, and he addresses us, beloved masters. For many years, we of the higher realms have been speaking of an accelerated global shift of consciousness. In preparation for this divine event, we activate the diamond core God cell within your heart center. This core seed atom strengthens and solidifies your connection with your Father, Mother, God, and the Supreme Creator. As you strive to integrate more and more of the multidimensional facets of your divine self, as we have told you, the Creator is now taking an active part in the evolutionary process of the universe and is sending down from its heart center an infusion of pure divine essence. Over the many eons of time, you have refracted, separated, and diminished yourselves outward and downward into your present state of being. You have devolved to the furthermost limits, and now it is time to retrace your journey back into the realms of light. You in your human vessel will incorporate the essence of the Creator that is flowing down onto the earth plane. It has been said by many, you dwell within the Creator, and the Creator dwells within you. And during these unprecedented times, you are being gifted with as much Creator light as you can contain. All you have to do is to give your higher self permission to begin this life-expanding infusion and then radiate the gift of Creator light out into the world and to all those around you. And it's an unusual message this time. Archangel Michael went on to give 16 higher truths, and these are all numbered, and I've highlighted a few of them. One says, be aware that there is an energy potential all around you, and it radiates as an infinity sign from you, above, below, in front and in back. What you are thinking and feeling creates a vibrational pattern, and it radiates out from you and magnetizes you to energies, situations or people who are in harmony with that vibrational resonance or pattern. Change your thoughts and the vibrational energy you project, and you will change your world. Another one, light, sound and colour are the modalities of healing and expanding your consciousness and your reality. You are remembering and you are learning to use some of the major tools of mastery that are a part of your divinity and birthright. Toning and learning to use sacred harmonics will help cure many of the symptoms of distress or illness that you are experiencing, for it brings your DNA, etheric, emotional and mental bodies back into harmony. Yet another, there are living libraries of knowledge stored at every level of existence through this many-faceted universe, and you're beginning to tap into these wondrous storehouses of higher wisdom. There are recording angels or celestial recorders who keep a record of every thought, action, and event that has ever taken place or ever will take place. As you heal, cure, and transmute the old, painful, negative thought forms of the past, the cosmic records are altered, and memories of the trials and lessons you have experienced are wiped out. All that will be left are the records of your successful experiences, the joy of the journey, and the wisdom you have to share about your sojourns through the multi-dimensions of creation. Another, and I'll make this the final one because it works in quite well because I'm coming into the final minutes of the program, and that is each of you has the ability to contribute something personal and unique to the divine blueprint now being designed for the future of humanity and the earth. You have been given an extraordinary gift by the Creator, the divine privilege of participating in the creation of your own destiny. Each of you has the potential of becoming a glorified mortal. You are becoming spirit-infused mortals, which assures your immortal status. You are multifaceted and have consciousness on many more levels than you can comprehend at this time. You are an immortal soul with a mortal mind and body. You are in the process of soul expansion and light infusion. Get to read the whole of the message. It's a wonderful one. Now, I had much more than I could have dealt with today, but I will try and include some that I missed this week in next week's program. So, thank you very much for being with me. I hope you enjoyed it. I look forward to being with you next week. God bless you all. Thank you.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.